Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
A pleasant good afternoon, everyone. Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Always remember, there's the Sunbury Motors way, and there's the other guy's way. Well, Sunbury Motors way wins out every single time. Great to have you with us. A lot to talk about. Phone lines open at 800-795-9565, 1-800-795-9565. Our play-by-play call of the day. Clint Robinson at the plate. A walk-off with Charlie Slows on WJFK.
Pitch. Swing and a high fly ball. Right field deep. Martinez going back on the warning track at the wall. And it's gone! Goodbye! Game over! Bang! Zoom goes Clint Robinson! It's a game-winning pinch hit! Walk-off home run in the bottom of the ninth inning! And the Nationals out of the field to mob Clint Robinson at home.
Evidently, Clint Robinson did not know it was a walk-off until he saw all of his teammates waiting for him at home plate. And I guess he came around third like, what are they doing out here? He didn't know it was the bottom. He didn't know it was the game winner. Now, I don't know how you don't know that. I don't know. But then again, I've never hit a game winner ever in my life, so to me it would be monumental, and I would be very well aware of the fact that I did it. But evidently he didn't know he did it. Wow. And then Bryce Harper, you could see him in the background. He's still so mad at the home plate umpire for a previous call. You can see him screaming at the umpire as Robinson's going around the bases. It really, at times, is a clown show down there. I mean, it really is. Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, some down there weren't too fond of Dusty Baker becoming the manager. Let's see how the rest of the season shakes out.
I mean, so far, record-wise, they've been fine. They just signed Strasburg to a long-year contract. And
it was 175 over how many years was it?
Seven years.
There was an option third or fourth year. It's an opt-out third or fourth year.
Right. They're wondering now about Bryce Harper, whether they should sign him to a long-term contract. I think what you need to do is take a long look, and the Phillies are going to have to do this at some point. The Phillies aren't there yet. But I think the Phillies need to take a long-term look at their prospects and then at the point year-wise, where arbitration comes into play, a year ahead of that, they need to identify which players they're going long-term with and sign them to long-term deals to avoid arbitration. I think that's in part what the Nationals have to consider here with Bryce Harper. Do you give him a huge deal, or do you give him a deal that avoids arbitration? The Pirates did that with Andrew McCutchen, Starling Marte, Gregory Polanco. They gave each of them long-term deals where the Pirates do not have to deal with the ugliness of arbitration. The Phillies are eventually going to have to do this. There'll be a point with Mikhail Franco. They'll have to consider it with him. They're going to have to consider it, obviously, with some of the guys they have not yet brought up. Yeah, in other words, you don't have to do it early on in their career. You know, you bring Crawford up, for example. You're not going to have to do that with him right away. But about the third year in, you're going to have to think about doing it if you think he is your long-term solution there. Because, look, by doing it, you give the player the added security. You also have something that you know is in the framework of your payroll, and you avoid the ugliness of arbitration where nasty things are said on each side. And the Pirate model as to how to handle younger players is one that needs to be implemented by many franchises. I don't care if it's Washington, Philadelphia, whatever. I think because the Pirates, I think, have it right. Now, the Phillies have more money at their disposal because of the fifth largest market in the country. Their Comcast deal is larger than the one with Root Sports with the Pirates. But I also think that when you have young players and you are going to build around them as some of the centerpieces of your future, you need to take a long, hard look as to which ones you want to sign to that initial long-term deal that's not off the charts, but it avoids arbitration over a five-year period. They're not there yet with Mikhail Franco. They're a couple of years away from that deal, but he'd be one of the first guys you'd look at and say you should get one. Take you through to, you know, getting you close, you know, through that to that free agency level. And that's something you'll have to consider at some point. But, yeah, Bryce Harper, his agent Scott Boras, not the easiest to negotiate with, but they say the Nationals have not approached him yet about a long-term contract. Okay. The CBS Sports line, John Solomon came here, the National College Football writer, and he had a long talk with James Franklin about the future of Penn State football. And, of course, it does deal with the topic of NCAA penalties on the program and so forth. It's interesting. James Franklin is in this interesting spot. We're supposed to go in. We're supposed to meet. I think we're meeting Thursday morning. It's just one of those, you know, we meet every once in a while. And just, you know, sometimes he gets a hold of me and says, hey, you know, let's just talk for a little while. Sometimes I get a hold of him and say, let's talk for a while. So, and this is a case, this was the case where it was me. I was the one that said, hey, you know, let's talk about a few things. And I did this, by the way, before any of this other stuff came up. I had the same conversation, in fact, today with Pat Chambers. James has had to take the program through a recovery stage. That is very difficult. When I was at the Susquehanna Valley Country Club last Wednesday, two guys came in, and they recognized who I was. They immediately wanted to talk about Penn State football. Okay, which is fine. I'll do that anytime. It's part of what I do. And one of them said, hey, you know, he's got to understand, people are getting a little restless out here. And I completely understand that as well, because you as fans are not used to this. And on top of it, look, it's your hard-earned money. You have to choose where you want to spend it. So I do understand that. But nobody's ever been through this before. Nobody. At SMU, they shut down the program, and then they brought it back. Well, when they brought it back, it was, again, I don't know this process at all of how do you bring it back and start from square one. And it's long term. UAB shut down for a different reason, economics. Now they're going to bring it back. But nobody I know has had to go through this, where you get knocked down to 65 scholarships. And you only have, I think Bill O'Brien went into the Wisconsin game, and I think he had, 39 scholarship players available his last game coaching at Penn State. James Franklin last three or four games of his first season and the bowl game with Boston College had 41 scholarship players available. Because he was trying to redshirt some, obviously. He's trying to somehow build a program here instead of just trying to do something short-term. And even though you are back to 85, or you're allowed to be, he's not quite, you know, there isn't, let's be honest, there isn't a, really a very few programs in the country that have 85 recruited scholarship guys on there. I mean, you fill to get to 85 with three or four, maybe five walk-on players that deserve to get scholarships. The Ryan Kaisers of the world, for example, get their scholarship. But I think the problem that James Franklin has had is this. I know some people are like, oh, yeah, it's late game coaching decisions. We'll get to that in a moment. The problem he has had is this. When the NCAA said you can go back to 85, and when they gave, and when they said you can go to bowl games, there's a small fraction out there that thought that that was an automatic flip of the switch and everything was back to normal. Okay, the switch is flipped. The problem is you have to gradually get yourself back to 85. And it's not easy to get there. And I think I think a year ago was a big lesson in that you can fill up every scholarship that you have. I think last year Penn State, because of Kevin Reiner, had 26 guys come in, then one was forced out of the program and eventually transferred to UMass. So you had 25, and that got them up to 77. And that's by getting a – I think that should have been a major message to everybody, that you filled every scholarship availability, and you still didn't get to 85. And that's how far behind you were. Now you can get it to – the level you want to be. But again, there's still a domino effect to it, and here's part of the domino. There are only 10 seniors on the team because now you're so heavily weighted the other way. Those smaller recruiting classes are the ones that are coming up now. So there are pluses and minuses to it. The plus is that you've got many more underclassmen in the program. The minus is you don't have a lot of seniors who have been through the war for you. Let's go to Dick in Milton. Hi, Dick. How are you?
Good, Steve. Hey, you said something earlier that kind of piqued my interest when you talked about the Longhorn Network and how much money they've lost, like $50 million. I'm just rounding it up. Right. And, yeah. and my question to you is, because of the way the economy is around the country, and in here in particular, with Penn State football, and the other factor is a lot of their fans are older people who obviously are not going to be at Penn State, at Beaver Stadium forever. Do you think there's enough, and also now we factor in the cost, do you think there's enough people, young people, to take their place for a while to fill this void, if there is a void, so to speak, so they can still get 100,000 people at Beaver Stadium? I guess that's my question to you.
That's a great question. What they have done is this, and I find it interesting, is that I think there is a plan, a season ticket plan, where if you just graduate, something you and I are not familiar with, Dick. it's a distant memory.
I understand that.
But if you just graduate, you can get a reduced price on the initial few years of a season ticket. Then eventually, at a certain point, it has to transition over from that to, obviously, a bigger plan. You ask, I think, what is the billion-dollar question? Will younger people go to games? Because, let's face it, you and I both enjoy, like everybody else, having that flat-screen TV with HD where the game is so crystal clear you feel like you're right there. There is something about the ambiance of being there, about walking out of the portal and looking out and seeing the field, seeing the players, being a part of the atmosphere and feeling it. But I've also said many times on the show that I think when you do any kind of new stadium construction, and I wasn't referring to Penn State, I was just referring to football stadiums, baseball parks, and so forth in general, that building them smaller probably was smarter. And I think that, for one thing, you're going to see, for example, Ohio State is still going to be over 100,000. But they're knocking 3,000 to 4,000 seats out of there as part of their next renovation. This summer at some point, maybe July, could be probably August now, that we'll hear what they're going to do with Beaver Stadium. There is no doubt in my mind, Dick, that when it's done, it's not going to be 107,000. And I think the days that you and I are talking about were certain places like Alabama, Texas, Penn State, Michigan, Ohio State, where they're all over 100,000, Tennessee. I don't think you're going to see people go in that direction. I think you're going to see the direction of stadiums being built in the 65,000 to 80,000 seat range because of the reasons you just talked about.
Well, you know this, that Major League Baseball went through a syndrome where, especially the National League, where they were all copycat stadiums. And then a lot of them have downsized at Pittsburgh and all. You know, they just have, and of course, Camden Yards, which is my favorite. But they've actually limited the number of seats compared to what it used to be. They went from the 59,000, 60,000 to 48,000. And I guess my other question to you is, because you travel, you see these places, do you notice less than, well, maybe I'm not the count, do you notice that some of the stadiums don't have as many people going to a football game on a Saturday when Penn State's there even?
Yeah.
Or don't you notice
really,
that?
No, I do notice it, and that's a really good question. Ohio State's filled. We right. know that. When Penn State plays at Rutgers, that's filled. Michigan State is usually, I'm going to say, 80 to 90% filled. Michigan has seen a dip, but now with Harbaugh there, you've seen them come back. Minnesota is okay, but it's a 50,000-seat stadium, which is the right size for them. Northwestern's no better than okay. Indiana's like 30 to 37,000. Northwestern's like 30 to 37,000. Illinois has seen a dramatic drop. I mean, it's fallen through the floor there at Illinois. Wisconsin's good. No issue. They're selling out at Iowa, but then again, they're winning again. And Nebraska, no matter what, Dick, in Nebraska, they're really good no matter what in terms of attendance. Rutgers is only really good when Penn State or Ohio State's there. And Maryland's going to be a really interesting one in the future as to how well they draw in football. Because in basketball, that's the best basketball experience I've seen in this conference is Maryland.
Well, I was in Maryland last year.
Fan-wise.
Nice crowd in Maryland.
That was good. That was really good. And they played in the bigger stadium, too. I mean,
right, they played in Ravens Stadium. I know that.
They have, 18,000 more seats than what they have at home.
Right, but it was a nice crowd. It was actually really good. I mean,
I guess my thing is, I just think as
Penn State, I just use them because that's my most. I just think when you look around and see all the older people there, and I'm not sure if I looked over at the student section and the kids that graduated in the last 10 or if there's enough people living close enough to fill that void. And when those people stop coming, only because physically it won't be able to. It won't be able to. I mean, I could see it dropping off somewhat because of that, if nothing else. We'll see where it goes.
You know what's interesting, though? You did bring up the student section. And the student section is the largest in the country.
Right.
At 22,000. For example, take Georgia. I think Georgia's student section is like 13, 14,000 as an example, and Georgia's big-time football. We know attendance across the country has gone down a bit, but Penn State student season tickets sell out, as you know, in seconds.
Yes, I do.
And,
I know that.
And so that's the base at 22,000 per year that's there. That's the base you're hoping to attract to do exactly what you're just talking about, cultivating them all the way through, hoping that they will be that lifelong fan that you and I have seen for decades here at Penn State. I think that, in the end, is the hope. And they certainly, at least in terms of a start, because of the 22,000 they have there, at least as a start. After that, winning football is going to be a big part of it. You and I can say, hey, go to the Creamery, see the Nittany Lion. But you know what? You got to win. And at some point, that's going to be the whole key. I mean, people want to be around something exciting.
Well, I do know this. I'm going to let you go on this. There'll be a time this year. It's going to happen within the next month or so. If the Yankees don't win, the fans will be up in arms over there. If they're attendance drops at Yankee Stadium. It might not, only because of the number of people. There will be hell to pay for somebody because they're not going to tolerate it. George would never tolerate this. And I'm not a Yankee fan, but I'm just saying I can't.
No.
Can't imagine.
And not only that, but you know what? But you know, Dick, the big problem they've got, besides not winning, is that they've priced themselves out.
Well, I understand that. And you know, they had to pay. They had to charge a lot just so they could pay a couple of their ball players.
But you know
this very well. Being obviously, they're just not going to tolerate that in New York after a while. It's not going to happen. And they have to be almost getting hostile over there pretty soon. I can see that. I didn't mean to go there, but when you said about winning, and they're used to winning. That's the whole thing.
Yeah,
they're used to winning.
Exactly. I agree with everything you just said.
And if they continue not to win to the point where they're a 500 ball team or below that, then that's where something will happen. No, I'm thinking.
Yeah.
I'm just guessing.
Yeah.
Winning is contagious, sir. But I'll let you go. I just wanted to get your input on Penn State and the fans and how you think it'll shake out. I don't see it dropping dramatically, but we'll see where it goes. I'm hoping it doesn't, you know.
Well, I mean, let's face it. It's been hard for the fan base over the last few years, obviously, because the fan base, I think every time they feel like, okay, maybe things are starting to really settle down and they feel like there's some sense of overall, maybe a slice of optimism, a slice of moving forward, a week like last week happens.
Understand that, yeah.
And all of a sudden it's right back in everybody's face again, and it's a here we go again deal with, and, you know, it's... And when you try to explain that it's an insurance claim, the insurance company doesn't want to pay. The insurance company is sitting there saying, okay, there are depositions. Now, the depositions aren't vetted, but there are depositions. And all the judge ruled was, you're correct, there are. So we'll move forward because you're correct, there are depositions. That was the entire ruling.
Right.
But it's still,
I'm just hoping,
but it's still another hammer on the head. I'm sorry, about that.
I said that's what they can move past it for the second time, and this is the end of a bad situation. I'm hoping so.
Because once they make the news,
you know what happens? There's people that just love it because they like people that don't like Penn State just love that bad publicity. So you see, I told you so, blah 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 blah. They get one on one.
You got that right, and. And again, I thought it was interesting that CNN and NBC were so quick with their stories when this whole thing happened. And then it hit me. That stuff's been sitting there, and it's the month of May, and it's ratings time. And so, boom, it took them seconds to roll it out. It wasn't, you know, that wasn't exactly an in-depth report on what was going on. You know, six assistants. Okay, give me a name. Like, I'll take one. Give me one name. There's no name in any of this. That's why this thing is really bothersome by the lack of names, accountability. There's just so many things in here that just don't quite pass the smell test. And I think it's part of your job as a journalist to ask yourself, does this pass the smell test?
Well,
I don't know if it passes
the story and
sensationalistic test. It passes that. Does it pass the smell test? And to me, it doesn't.
Well, the thing that really bothered me most of all about that is when they had the trial for how long it lasted and all the publicity. How come all these people weren't called as witnesses in the court trial?
Well, I think what they did, they made a conscious decision because the key for the prosecution is to get a conviction.
Right.
So I think when they went with the people that they absolutely felt could get them the conviction and didn't want to go beyond that, but kept it to that group that was willing to testify, that would give compelling and thoughtful testimony. So there's no need to roll out X amount of people. I think they tried to see if they could make their point with this group, and they did.
Well, if they didn't use them, then they weren't that reliable witnesses to me anyhow. That's what I'm going to go with that. I'll let it go at that.
Okay. Thank you, Dick. Appreciate it. Okay, bottom of the hour, time for news. This is where we get to the big finish of the half hour here. Yeah, it's been tough. Penn State fans, every time they feel like the door of opportunity is finally opened, right? Suddenly you feel like here comes the hammer again. Well, final half hour coming up next here on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
If you thought 100 years in business was impressive, SMC is going to show you 101 is even more spectacular. During the month of May, Sunbury Motors Ford is going to sell 101 new Fords by discounting every new Ford to the lowest price possible. Plus, give you more for your trade. SMC is where you want to be if you want to choose from 42 new Escapes starting at $18,880. SMC is where you want to be if you want to choose from 85 new F-150s starting at $23,749. Saving you up to $11,400. SMC is where you want to be if you want 0% financing for 72 months on Focuses, Fusions, Edges, Escapes, and Explorers. Now is the time to take advantage of Sunbury Motors' goal to sell 101 new Fords in May. SMC's goal is your gain. 101 vehicles sold means you'll save more money than ever before. Sunbury Motors and the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury. Selling more cars and satisfying more customers for 101 years.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Key Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Great to have you with us on this Tuesday. It is, I think, a remarkable story as an aside. Obviously, you know, we always know you never want to take away from the biggest issue. And we all know the victims in the case. So now let's just take it from a sports side of it. Now we'll just do the sports side of it. Somehow, some way, people that have enjoyed Penn State athletics over the years and have enjoyed Penn State football over the years, the vast majority have hung in there. Now, last year, what was the attendance last year? Was the average what? The average number of tickets per game is a little bit more than 99,000 a game, which is really good. And we all know that in some form, you know, you keep reading stories of the word renovations being used and not building. Penn State in 14-15 did generate $125.7 million in athletic revenue, which was 10th in the entire nation. And athletic donations rose from $24.2 million in 2014 to $27.7 million. In 2015. So it's going up. Now, part of that is, you know, obviously people continue to donate, but I also think it's important that in 14 and 15, I think there was also that sense of things starting to turn just a bit, and then that's until the past week. And, you know, this is going to be an interesting time because you've got James Franklin heading into his third year. He had to take the program through a recovery period, as I mentioned earlier. And and no one is used to a recovery period. What's a recovery period? Well, a recovery period is building up scholarships again. A recovery period is trying to get your roster balanced. Because of everything, it was all knocked out of whack. Fewer offensive linemen in the program. Making hard decisions because you had fewer scholarships to work with. And it's caused this recovery period. I think what I watched in the spring was the first time I felt like a foundation was being built. More offensive linemen in the program, more guys that can play across the board, a little bit more depth. There's more speed in the program than I can remember at any time. And obviously, a legitimate star in the program like Saquon Barkley. I mean, he's a legitimate star here. And now the key is, you know, they're going to go through a tougher schedule this year. Pitt's very good. Temple's very good. Iowa was in the Rose Bowl last year, and they've got C.J. Beathard back, and they got Vandenberg back. You've got Ohio State, which is not going to be Ohio State of years past, but I still expect them, especially with J.T. Barrett there, to be very, very good. Michigan's going to be better. I mean, Michigan's going to be better. Now, they've got to solve the quarterback part. Let's be straight about that. Michigan is really, really good in the offensive line, really, really good at wideout. They're okay at tailback. They're really good on the defensive front, and they're really good in the secondary. They are not good at linebacker yet. Linebacker is a big hole for them. I think tailback and linebacker are the two biggest holes in their football team. Tight end, they're awesome. Jake Butt's great. So you've got Temple, Pitt, Iowa at home, Michigan State at home, Ohio State at home, Maryland at home, at Michigan. This is a tough schedule that Penn State plays this year. You know, if anybody calls this show and says, well, here we go, another easy schedule. No, that's not how it plays out. I mean, men's basketball is the same way. It's the toughest schedule I've seen men's basketball have since 2001. Patrick Chambers and I were just talking about that today, as a matter of fact, as we were going over the schedule together. And what's really interesting is that the fans here have really done an unbelievable job of hanging in with all this. They really have. Wrestling is sold out every single time in Rec Hall. Women's volleyball draws great crowds. Erica Dombach was telling the group, you know, I spoke to a group today. Erica Dombach, who's the women's soccer coach, she was known as Erica Walsh. Then she married Jason Dombach. And by the way, they're expecting, which is great news. Congratulations to them. You know, they just won the national championship in December, and they drew a record crowd this year to Jeffrey Field. Women's volleyball, Russ Rose, draws huge crowds. I think men's basketball, the way he's recruited the last 2 years, he's now giving people some semblance of feel and hope around, hey, look, men's basketball is going to be a player. And then there's James Franklin. And people want to see the winning happen more so. I think what they've done here the last 2 years is remarkable in a lot of ways, because these were going to be the years. It's one thing. That's one area about doing my job that because I do have more access and sit downs with coaches. The Penn State beat writers are awesome. They do a great job. Penn State beat writers do a great job. But I think even they acknowledge that my ability to go in and sit down and have some private talks with some people, you know, I can do that. And I do. And Bill O'Brien, if he said it to me once, he must have said it to me 9 or 10 times. 14 and 15 are the 2 years I fear, because at that point, all this stuff is going to hit like a ton of bricks. 16 is kind of like the start of the coming out of the recovery period. It's a foundation time for him. And they've recruited a lot more speed. They've got more depth in the program. Are they there yet? Not there yet, but you'd see it on the field and on the practice field, certain elements coming together. And I think that the issue that you have, I think the vast majority of Penn State fans understand this. There is a segment that doesn't quite have a handle on it, but I think part of that is not a criticism of that segment of the Penn State fan base. Far from it. It's a segment, a passionate part of the Penn State fan base that is ultimate competitor type inside of them, that is mad that they're not beating Ohio State at the moment. They're mad that, you know, that Michigan won last year's game. They're anxious about the Pitt game coming up because of that competitor inside of them. They want things back to normal quickly. And that's not a criticism. I think that is just, I understand the competitive nature of this as a fan. The worst thing for fans to go through, and believe me, it's one of the worst things for a coach to go through, is when you hear them talk about the process. Well, there is a process to getting Penn State back among the elites in the division and obviously nationally as well. The recovery phase the last 2 years was part of that process. This foundation year is part of that process. But between you and me, you and I both know. Doggone it, the heck with the process. The process thinks I want to see it happen now. And I completely understand that. I've said that to a couple coaches, and I say, you and I both know the process stinks. Come on. And they're like, But it's part of the process. This has been the toughest. I know it's been tough at times to sit back and talk about some of this stuff. But as you know, in listening to the show, I have not shied away from doing it. I've gone out here and thrown the heavy innings every single day. Instead of, you know what, I think I'll take a week off. So I'm going to use the process thing one more time. There's a review of all this going on, I think, as most of you know. Let that process play out. Just let it play out. Penn State fans, I think, have done a great job so far of being mature and not jumping to conclusions. Once everything comes out, I think then everybody can draw conclusions. Let it happen. I know for all of you, it can't happen soon enough, and I understand that. Obviously, when I talk about having private conversations, after Joe was let go by Penn State, I did have two very long hour-plus conversations with Joe. One was right around Thanksgiving. The other one was right about Christmas time. And the single most important thing to him, and he said it to me in a couple different times, Steve, just let the truth come out. He says, the most important thing is to have the truth be out there. And the reason was he wasn't afraid of the truth. We'll come back with more in a moment here on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Great to have you with us. But one thing, it's important for James Franklin. He's got to just continue to put the pedal to the floor. He's got to be able to go out, recruit, set up his satellite camps, do things like that. He's got to keep pushing forward all the time. I know in what I do, I mean, if you're in a, Steve, you had to do that corporate partners luncheon today. What else did you do? Well, guess what? I worked on Indiana today and I got Indiana done. Well, the next thing I've got on my checklist is Rutgers, and that's going to be worked on tomorrow. I'm going to work on Rutgers tomorrow, and then before the week's out, I'll work on Michigan State, and then I'm going to go to Marist in basketball. And because I've got things to get ready for, too. And so through all of this, I let people who are in spots that can take care of such things handle it. Joe in Greensburg. Hello, Joe. Long time no hear. It's always great to hear your voice, my friend.
Hey, Steve. How you doing?
Hey, I'm doing well, sir.
Just to rehash about the Paterno situation, what's come across your last couple of days. I don't know if you're aware, but you see the story just broke on Yahoo Sports that the prosecutor said that there's nothing to the assistant coaches. It's double, triple hearsay. Did you see that?
Well, yes, I did. And that's what we've been saying in all of this. There's even more, believe me, there's even more so when you look at the depositions of the ones they talk about in the 70s that have gigantic holes in them. But again, it was an insurance thing saying that the depositions existed. Well, what's the judge supposed to say? Yes, they do. They exist.
Well, but my problem with the whole situation is the university. They've got to start getting really aggressive because some of this stuff is just killing us. I mean, the media is killing us, and it's not true. They've got to come out forcefully. The Board of Trustees, I don't care who, they've got to come out with some kind of public relations now. And hit the media really hard because some of these stories.
Joe, do you feel Dr. Barron's statement was pretty strong the other day? In your opinion, yes or no?
Yes, it was a very good start.
Oh, okay,
very good start. However, with this news, with this story just breaking today, I think they're going to come out with another statement. I think they've got to be forceful. I mean, Our reputation, and I feel so bad for the Paternos. I mean, it's got to be just devastating the way they're getting treated, the way Joe's getting treated.
Yeah,
I'm sick of it. I'm tired of it. I mean, I hate to say this, but former Penn State alum writing those stories, she has no basis in those stories. I mean, it's just unbelievable. And everyone's taking this gospel. I mean, there's just the journalism today is just awful. Just off. I mean, I grew up in the Walter Cronkite areas, but today it's just awful. And what's really the problem is American people listen to it; they're gullible, and they just there's no fact finding anymore. I'm so disgusted with it. I'm very disgusted with the whole situation.
Joe, as I said yesterday, I was around the man for 32 years. I saw him make some big decisions, and not all of them were player personnel decisions. I mean, hard decisions. What was reported last week and this weekend directly contradict the decision maker I saw for 32 years. That was from my personal point of view, because I actually saw him make some hard decisions on certain things.